I would make a big effort.
On the telly the other night, and somebody was interviewing you about this, and you said that you were actually kind of surprised that when you saw yourself in the makeup and the hair and all that, how you really did look like it. Had you ever...
Yes, I was. And I have to say, even more so when I saw it on the screen. That was when it really came together, because obviously, you know, just looking in the mirror, I couldn't see the physicality and in the sense of the movement and so forth. There's one shot that always completely blows me away, and that's when a shot of me coming out and looking at the flowers. And I'm quite familiar with that piece of film because I watched it a lot to do more or less exactly what the Queen did. But you just can hardly tell the difference. So that's sort of the most amazing moment. But in terms of, you know, I used very little makeup. You know, it was like hours in the makeup chair, you know, with all kinds of magical things, you know, being added to my face. I did very, very little makeup. But it was more to do with the set of the face, really, you know. The set of the head, the set of the mouth.
Have you heard any reaction from, obviously, I'm sure Shirley Flynn hasn't seen it, or even just anyone in the royal family who's seen the movie?
No, and I don't think we ever will. You know, I mean, it's dangerous for them to either say we think it's wonderful or we hate it, because they're not film critics. Do you know what I mean? They're not... I think they would be very careful about never saying or doing anything that could be used by the distributors of a film or by, do you know what I mean? I think they'd be very above it, completely above it.
What about Blair's Camp? Have they said anything?
Blair's Camp's another issue. I mean, that's interesting. I don't know. Peter Morgan will be probably the, or even Stephen, but I don't think that they would know at this point. That sort of information filters down over a couple of years. You know, eventually you get the word one way or the other. But you know, it's received a huge amount of attention in England, Britain, this film. I mean, massive amount of attention in terms of the print press, and I mean everywhere you looked for a couple of weeks, it was, you just couldn't get away from it. So obviously the profile is really, really high. So one thinks, one knows that surely they couldn't resist looking at it at least.
Did your meeting with the Queen, I know it was for tea and it was probably very quickly, but did it help you at all capture her?
Very much so, absolutely, because there is a twinkle to her and a relaxation about her that you don't really see in her formal moments, and her formal moments are what we mostly see. 99.9% is we see those formal moments. And they are very, very familiar to us. That, to all of us, is the Queen. But there is another Queen, woman, Elizabeth Windsor, who is very easy and welcoming and sparkly and with the most lovely smile and alert, and not that sort of, you know, reserved, cool gravitas that she normally sort of communicates. So I very much tried to bring that into, because the tragedy happened so fast in the film, I only really had a little tiny space at the very beginning of the film and then a tiny space at the end of the film to bring that personality into it.
As far as your work goes for this year, great body of work. Prime Suspect, which I've always loved, going back to the first one. The other, Elizabeth. Talk about the differences of wardrobe for you.
Big difference between those three. The most glorious, obviously, although by far the most uncomfortable, Elizabeth I. And I love costume drama. You know, there's nothing I love more than being fitted for costumes and with fabulous fabrics. And with Elizabeth I, my best moment of the day was I go into my trailer and we had all the jewellery laid out. I mean, banks and banks and banks of jewellery. And I'd say, let's go well, I think I'll wear all of those bracelets, and I'll wear, you know, three of those necklaces, and maybe I'll wear that one around my waist, and let's have two of those brooches. So I piled it on. Elizabeth II, you know, such a different person. I cried when I saw the wardrobe for that, literally, when I had my first costume fitting, there were those sensible brown shoes lined up and those square tweed skirts, you know, padded knickers and padded bra and everything. But actually I came to love very much being in the Queen and in Elizabeth Windsor, and the costume was very much a part of it. And then obviously then on to Prime Suspect. And it's true, it's been the most extraordinary year for me. I did Elizabeth I, had about 2 weeks off, did Elizabeth II, had about 3 weeks off, did Prime Suspect. So it was very intense year or so of work.
Lee Daniels always...
I've chatted before, of course, yes.
He said it was a joy to have you there.
Yes, it was a joy to be there. That was the funnest movie, and that was great costume-wise as well, Vivian Westwood, thanks to Lee. And to be in a milieu that I just wasn't familiar with, you know, at all. Oh, don't worry, that's fine, don't worry. That sort of hip-hop world, you know, that's... I mean, obviously, I listen to hip-hop occasionally, not a lot, but you know, it's not a world. Meeting Macy Gray and Monique and people like that, that was a fantastic experience. Mm-hmm. You know, these just incredibly talented, wonderful people.
It's also a great thing about delivering another side of a whole other audience for you, too.
Yes, absolutely. Of course, absolutely. And you know, it was a really great movie, and into all these sort of grand things I've done. And someone the other day said, you know, Shadowboxer, I thought Shadowboxer was one of the best films of the year. Mm. And so I'm very, very proud of my participation in that.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Thank you. Could you talk about what did you kind of most pay attention to this role?
Well, obviously the voice was terribly important. The voice and the physicality, those two elements, in terms of the outward appearance of the Queen. I studied a great deal of film to watch her, you know, the way she walks, the way she holds her head, the way she, what she does with her hands, exactly where the handbag is held, when she wears her glasses and when she doesn't wear her glasses, which is quite interesting. When there's a tension and when there's a relaxation. So all of the physicality was obviously very important.
In the relationship between Queen Elizabeth II and Prince Philip, that's something that a lot of Americans don't really have any idea about. What sort of research did you guys have to do to try and accurately portray that?
Well, I mean, I did a lot of research about that, and that relationship is fascinating, actually. Yeah. I mean, it started Elizabeth was, I think she was about 16 when she fell in love with Philip. She was very young, and she was a young 16. And she said, that's the guy I want, and everybody in the palace and in her family disapproved of that match strongly. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't want her to marry him. They thought he was a bit like Diana when he was young. He was a bit, you know, cool and trendy and hip and mm-hmm. wild, and, you know, would drive up to the palace in an open top sports car. He was a dispossessed prince. He had no money at all. She stuck to her guns, and she said, no, that's the guy I want. They even took her away on a long world tour to try and encourage her to forget him. Mm-hmm. And she wouldn't forget him, and when she came back, she said, that's the guy I want to marry. Mm-hmm. So she did marry him. And he was quite I suspect, a sort of macho kind of a guy, you know, quite testosterone-driven and quite... strong and opinionated and all of those things. And then she became queen, and then he had to step into second place. He wanted her, which is interesting, he wanted her and Mountbatten, his his uncle, was encouraging the Queen to change her name to his name. And if she'd done that, really kind of he would have become king, and mm-hmm. she sort of would have become his consort, but she refused. Mm-hmm. And she said, no, I'm the Queen. You're not going to be the king, I'm going to be the queen, and you're going to be my consort. And I think that made life very difficult for them in the early stages of their marriage. And there was an, you know, I think when they were trying to sort out how to live together, it was very, very difficult. And they got through it. And I think now they have a very solid relationship. I think they're good friends now. You know, I think they're really, really good friends. I think they support each other. I think they rely upon each other. And they enjoy the same, you know, hobbies. And they definitely found a way of living together. He has managed to deal with being three steps behind the Queen his whole life. Difficult for a man, you know, difficult. And they found a way of living together that I think actually is very, you know, is very admirable and quite sweet, actually.
Where does cabbage come from?
I'm not sure. You have to ask Peter that. Okay. I think there's also sausage is the other one that I think that he calls her.
Can I ask about the stag scene? Because there seems to be a tremendous dichotomy between somebody who loves animals and then hunts them. And
no, the Queen doesn't hunt animals.
Well, he...
Philip does. The Queen never shoots animals.
Because that was so interesting that she would go see the stag body but not see Diana.
No, the Queen doesn't shoot.
Okay.
She'll go out with the hunting party, but she never shoots herself.
She's the Queen. She should stop it.
But there was tension.
Well, you know, it's an...
It's a beautiful scene, but...
Yes. Yes, well, you know, there's many different ways of looking at that particular mm-hmm. issue. The reality is deer are very, very destructive. I don't know if you live in Los Angeles or mm-hmm. have ever had deer in your garden, mm-hmm. but they are, you know, mm-hmm. they can wipe out a garden mm-hmm. in 24 hours. So they're very destructive, and they are very, very prolific. You know, they multiply very fast. So if they weren't hunted, they would have to be culled mm-hmm. one way or the other. So it's not necessarily, although there is a recognition of the nobility of the animal, obviously. But the Queen doesn't hunt, no. She'll go out with hunting parties because she likes to be in the countryside, she likes to walk, she likes to be with her dogs. Mm-hmm. But she doesn't hunt herself.
Yet there is irony, though, I thought, in the most purely emotional, most touching moment for me is when she has that moment with the mm-hmm. with the stag.
Mm.
She clearly has a... you know, sense of regard, a kinship, something on a spiritual level, and yet she accepts it as de rigueur that he'll be shot down.
Yes.
And well, this is our thing with what we do, and it just struck me as odd that was there are
well,
two currents going on.
Well, of course, absolutely, and there are. It's not odd that there are two currents going on, really, is it?
In, right.
There is a dichotomy in life always, and. You know, part of that Scottish world, that Scottish tradition, is very much to do with hunting parties, and people, Americans, pay vast sums of money to go and stay in a Scottish baronial hall and go stalking and to kill a deer. That's all they want to do. I love that scene because I love the, you know, that the Queen is just dying inside and all she wants to do is scream, how could that stupid man have been so idiotic, you know, as to not have at least have a clean kill.
Mm.
But her sense of politeness, her sense of form is just to say my congratulations to your guest. And to me, in those words are just all the depth of emotion and the British sense of self-control, you know. I love that line.
I was going to ask you, in terms of your thoughts on the monarchy before you started this project mm-hmm. and afterwards, you know, as a Brit yourself and a Dane, mm-hmm. did it give you, what did it do for you? I mean, how did it make you feel? Did it change your feelings at all, or how did it make you feel?
It did change my feelings. I mean, not profoundly. I'm still ambivalent. I would like to see a much more open monarchy myself. I used to think that they were completely useless and we should get rid of them. I don't necessarily feel that way anymore. I'm still ambivalent. I still loathe the British class system. And in many ways, in all ways, the royal family are the apex of the British class system. And it's a system that I absolutely hate. But the reality is the last 40 years of life in Britain have eroded the British class system enormously. It isn't what it was before the Second World War, or even 10 years after the Second World War. Things have really, really changed. And always in change there are there are good elements in change and there are always bad elements in change. It's always dichotomy, isn't it?
You think they will continue after Elizabeth?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, absolutely, no question. I think they'll continue in a different way because I think Charles is of a very different... Oh, he's of a different generation. He's had to deal with different... and massively different problems in his life than Elizabeth dealt with in hers. And I think he's very much for an open monarchy. I think he will bring it very much into the modern age and change it. And, you know, I'm looking forward to that day.
Do you remember where you were when you heard the news about Princess Diana passing away?
I think I was in America. I don't specifically remember where I was, but I'm pretty sure I was in America.
What was that like, being outside the country when something tragic like that
there
happened?
There was well, of course she wasn't in the country either, was she? But, it was horrible. I mean, it was horrible. I was quite relieved not to be in Britain, though, at that time. Because, what happened in those 2 weeks to me was disturbing.
What was disturbing? The public reaction?
The public reaction was weird to me.
Do you think they overreacted to the death?
You can't say that, but I think that they got themselves in... It all became about them. It became about them. They appeared that it was about her. But it wasn't about her, it was about them. It was weird. I don't know, I just really, really... I was very glad not to be there.
Considering that reaction from the public...
And it was kind of like a circus, you know, like the carnival coming to town. And it was a carnival of death. And a sort of carnival of grief. But a carnival nonetheless.
Do you think that... It's been almost 10 years since that happened, since the death. Mm. Do you think that this movie could have been made 5 years ago?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, totally. Could have been made 10 years ago, 9 years ago. Yeah.
I think she ended her life, in a sense, by her poor, or appalling sense of judgment. I was asked to do a piece on when I was working at People magazine and looking at Dodi Fayed, and after making... like 3 or 4 hours of calls. I mean, it was very clear that anybody who would consider that guy to be a serious boyfriend had serious deficiencies in terms of human being able to judge people. It's astonishing.
It's astonishing. It is.
And it's kind
but
of
people only see what they want to see. And look at Mohammed Fayed. You know, he only sees what he wants to see about his son.
Right. I mean, it's a conspiracy.
Oh, all of that, and also how wonderful his son was, and you know, maybe I think there was a sweetness in that, you know, boy, man. I think there was a confusion and probably vulnerability, and there wasn't. He certainly wasn't a solid, secure, sensible person. But yes, I have to say I would agree with you.
Do you think the sort of the celebrity or the cult of personality that Diana helped cultivate during her lifetime, and now that sort of celebrity is being kind of you know, her sons are now caught up in that maelstrom as well. How badly do you think that's damaged the monarchy or just sort of the British culture in general? Because it seems like it's become more Americanized in that way, and that's sort of like, you know, that.
Well, don't you know? Don't know. In Americanized, it's not that you really, that tabloid journalism started in Britain. It didn't start in America. The Americans are conservative and polite by comparison, honestly, and intelligent. It actually sort of started in Australia, and Rupert Murdoch brought it to Britain and then spread it into America. It didn't start in America. You know what? It's the name of the game, and what can you do? You just have to deal with it. I think what one forgets about the monarchy is that, for example, in the Regency period, there was a huge amount of political satire. I mean, if you saw some of the cartoons that were put into the newspapers or put up on walls of the Regency era, you'd be absolutely horrified. I mean, they were so venal and attacking and critical and far beyond anything that we do.
Yeah.
You know, there was a cartoon that I remember of, was it the Queen or was it, I can't remember, a princess or the Queen? And it was like the equivalent of Princess Diana, except it wasn't Princess, you know, not the Queen, but, you know, that sort of personage. And this cartoon shows her sitting on a rock, you know, by the seaside. And it's only when you really look closely you realise a rock is made up of a huge pile of penises. Saying, you know, that's what her sexual life is all about. You know, shocking. Seriously shocking. And, you know, so the monarchy actually have come in and out of, not necessarily favour, but in and out of an atmosphere of overt criticism or freedom of people feeling free to criticise them. And one forgets that they've been through a lot, you know, over hundreds of years.
Yeah.
I grew up in England.
You know, Charles I has a head chopped off by the people. So, you know, they know all of that. They know where they're coming from. They know their history better than we do. And one tends to just see it in, and I think that they see themselves in the context of history very strongly.
Yeah.
So these tempests come and go, and they wash over them, and they're still standing, and they find ways of dealing with it. That was a bit dodgy, because above all, what a monarch needs is the love of the people. Without, if the whole of Britain absolutely loathed the monarchy, they'd be gone like that. But the reality is we don't. We criticise them, we torture them, we secretly, you know, bug their phones and then put the result into the newspapers. We satirise them, we make movies about them. But we're allowed to do that. And in a way, all of those things ultimately maybe just build ultimately the love a weird kind of love that we have for them. It's like a family love.
Like a rebellious adolescent child and a stuffy parent.
It's very much a family relationship, actually.
Were you surprised at the humor in this movie, that when you were reading, that in such a such a serious kind of movie, that there was humor and that it did not poke fun, but make a light part of the story? I mean, is that what
I think you can't do the story without a laugh, a smile coming on your face, because there's people as serious as they are and you know, gravitas, there's something intrinsically funny about them as well, because they live in this peculiar world that none of us can comprehend, and there is something, and I loved the delicacy of the humour in the piece. It's never a joke. It's always a laugh that comes absolutely naturally out of the situation. Yeah. And as you say, quite difficult to achieve that in a story that's actually very sort of sad and difficult.
Yeah. I thought he did a really good job, wonderful, and that was very much in the script,
absolutely.
I grew up in England. I'm awfully surprised by the depiction of the Queen Mother, because growing up as a child in England, she was the one that was so revered, and she turns in this movie, she's pretty edgy and salty and
she is true to the Queen. She's by far the sort of most I mean, very cutting sense of humour. Very. I mean, the odd little bits of film I've seen of her, she just comes out with these very, very dry kind of remarks. And of course, at this time, she was pretty old as well.
How do you describe it? Why the Queen kind of, that kind of the real emotion toward the Princess Diana, because that kind of she got jealousy, or why she reacted that way, and that reaction.
Now, are you talking about what's in the film, or are you talking about what's in the, what you think the Queen was like in real life?
In this film, that I kind of did not get why the Queen kind of reacted that way. She felt the jealousy, or she kind of felt something.
No, I don't think. You know, I mean, the relationship of the Queen with Diana is one that none of us really know. From the research that I did, all I could find really basically told me that the Queen was very, very kind to Diana and very supportive of her within her world. I think, and I think her attitude came very much from her own experience, as I was explaining early on with Edinburgh, that you had to gut it out. You had to find a way of making it work, even if it was a nightmare. You had to find a way of making it work, and in the end you did. And I think that in the early days of the collapse of that marriage, she thought that they would work it out the way she had with her husband, and that they would get over it and they'd find a way of carrying on together as friends, as partners, as, you know, as members of the royal family. Because if you're in the royal family, you're not just, you are a monarch, you're a member of the royal family as much as you are your own person. You're in this world that you have to. I'm sure you're Japanese, are you?
Yes.
Well, you must understand with your own royal family in Japan, so you can't behave. You have to
be royal.
You have to be royal. You know, you're buying into that. If you don't want that, don't go there. Don't go into the family.
Can I just ask a quick thing about the upcoming award season? Obviously, your name has come up already. Are you prepared again? Because you've been here before. Are you ready to go back into that? And how do you feel about the possibility of perhaps getting some nominations for this?
I'm glad I have to go. No, I don't.
You mean go to the awards, right?
Yeah.
Not leave our table. I have a feeling we'll be seeing you around.
Oh, well, how lovely. Thank you.
I was going to ask you what you're going to wear for the Oscars.